Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
O morning star, O morning star, shine forth bright across the light of
God. Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Most of the information that is really useful, besides winners and losers, when it comes to elections, even runoff elections like Georgia's last week, comes later when people have time to sit down and analyze the numbers and crunch them and burrow down into them and tell us what they really mean. There will be time for that, and some information's already coming out. Why was this Georgia runoff in some ways remarkable beyond the fact that in political terms, it decided, at least for 2 years, the political future of, well, at least three branches of the government and what they could accomplish? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to talk about two issues, the Georgia Senate runoffs and a new study of a Texas executive order and its effect on abortion in Texas and outside Texas. Dr. Michael New joins us, visiting assistant professor of social research and political science at the Catholic University of America, associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute, and columnist for National Review Online. Dr. New, welcome back.
Oh, thank you for having me.
What's the most remarkable thing about last week's Georgia senatorial runoff elections?
I think the most remarkable thing is the turnout. I mean, people who follow politics know that runoff elections and special elections typically have less turnout than presidential elections. I mean, the presidential elections get a lot more attention, they get more media coverage, and that tends to drive turnout. Special elections and runoff elections typically don't get quite the same amount of media coverage, and turnout tends to be typically a lot lower. But what was interesting about these elections in Georgia that we just had this past Tuesday was the fact that turnout rates were about 90% of what they are for the presidential election. So turnout did not fall that much. So that showed that there was a lot of interest in these elections and that a lot of people did, in fact, show up and vote for the various Senate candidates that were running.
Why did these runoff elections receive national attention?
They received national attention because control of the U.S. Senate was at stake. That Republicans, at the end of the most recent election cycle, controlled about 50 seats in the U.S. Senate, and Democrats had probably counted the votes of about 48 U.S. senators. So there were two Senate seats that were up for grabs. And if both those seats went to the Democrats, it would be a 50-50 split. And assuming that Joe Biden is, in fact, inaugurated as president, that means his vice president, Kamala Harris, would cast a tie-breaking vote and effectively give Democrats control of the Senate. So parts of control of the U.S. Senate was at stake. Both parties did invest very heavily in these elections, and that had a lot to do with the very high turnout numbers.
Why were runoffs required in that state?
Georgia has some unique rules. Usually, with Senate elections in other states, all you need to win a Senate seat is a plurality of voters, that whatever candidate gets the most votes becomes that state's U.S. senator. Georgia has a rule that requires that successful Senate candidates receive a majority of votes. So very often you have third-party candidates who run for Senate. Very often the Libertarians get on the ballot, and they get 2 or 3%. And very often that's enough to prevent either candidate from winning a majority of votes. So in both the Senate elections that took place in 2020, no candidate received a majority. The Republican candidates received a plurality of votes, but they did not receive 50%. And by the rules that govern the Senate elections in Georgia, that triggered runoffs against the top two vote getters. And in this case, even though the Republican candidates received a plurality, they didn't receive a majority. Again, that triggered the runoff. And it looks like the Democrat candidates have prevailed in the runoff.
So tell us about a runoff election in Georgia back in 1992.
So the 1992 election was interesting. That pitted Weishfowler, who was the incumbent Democrat senator against a Republican named Paul Coverdell. Paul Coverdell was a former state senator. He was actually director of the Peace Corps during the presidency of George H.W. Bush. So in the 92 elections, President Clinton won. And no matter what happened in this Georgia election, Democrats are going to control the presidency, the House, and the Senate. That said, Republicans wanted to win this seat. At the time, in the early 90s, the Democratic Party was a lot more diverse ideologically. You had more moderate Democrats. You had more conservative Democrats. If Republicans won the seat, that would give kind of moderate and conservative Democrats a bit more leverage in their negotiations with President Clinton. So even though this 1992 election didn't determine what party controlled the Senate, Republicans and Democrats still had a lot at stake. And, a good center-right coalition was assembled to support Paul Coverdell, and he was, in fact, successful. The Republican did, in fact, win that Senate seat. And essentially, it was interesting that turnout for Paul Coverdell, even though he was successful, was only about 59% of the total. So there was a big drop-off in turnout, whereas in the most recent runoff election, turnout was like 90% of the total. So even though the stakes were high in 1992, turnout was not nearly what it was for this most recent election that took place on Tuesday.
What is the political lesson for conservatives from last week's runoff in Georgia?
Well, first off, I want to commend a lot of the groups that sent volunteers to Georgia, like Susan B. Anthony List. And just a disclaimer, I'm an associate scholar at Lozier Institute, which is their research and education arm. So I want to commend Students' Life of America that did mobilize law students who spent time during their semester break doing door-to-door canvassing and trying to turn out votes for the pro-life candidates. So first, I do think that we should hold our heads high, that we did get a lot of votes turned out. I just think that we need to keep doing more grassroots organizing. Unfortunately, in this election, there were some things that were distracting. There were some people, again, not many, who thought that who were trying to discourage turnout because they thought that the elections were just fraudulent. And I don't dispute that vote fraud happens here and there, but vote fraud has not stopped conservative candidates from winning in Georgia. It hasn't stopped conservative candidates from winning statewide in other states. And to simply despair about, fraud is unhealthy and unhelpful. We need all hands on deck. And, the margins of this election were pretty slim. Again, it's really hard to say why the Democrats did prevail. It'll probably require more analysis of the data. But again, I think we need to keep doing grassroots organizing. And we need all hands on deck. And we shouldn't discourage people. Fraud sometimes does happen, but that hasn't stopped conservatives from winning statewide elections in Georgia and other states.
Turning to our second subject, tell us about a recent study published by the Journal of the American Medical Association.
So this is actually a very interesting study. That back in March, Texas Governor Greg Abbott issued an executive order which postponed a lot of elective and non-essential surgical procedures. And the way that a lot of people interpreted this executive order is it prevented or at least postponed a lot of elective abortions that were scheduled to take place in Texas. So this study kind of looked at how this executive order impacted the incidence of abortion in Texas. And what kind of the media is focusing on is they're saying that when this executive order expired in April, that led to a big increase in second trimester abortions in May. And there is some truth to that. But what the media is missing, and what I find very frustrating, is that second trimester abortions fell pretty dramatically in both March and February. So if you look at the total number of second trimester abortions performed in Texas, the overall numbers went down. There was an increase in, I guess, May, but it didn't really offset the decreases that occurred in other months. So there was no massive overall surge in second trimester abortions. There was a short-term increase, but didn't offset the decreases in other months.
So that's both inside and outside Texas?
Well, we know when it comes to second trimester abortions, we only know what happened within Texas. So it is possible that, some women went outside of Texas to obtain second trimester abortions. But we also know from this study that only about 9% of the abortions performed on Texas women occurred out of state. So the point I'm trying to make is that, a lot of the media coverage is trying to make the case there's this huge increase in second trimester abortions, but that's misleading. They all looks at 1 month. When you look at kind of the range of months, you really don't see this big increase. In fact, if anything, you see a slight decrease. Maybe that was offset by some women going out of state, but again, most of the abortions performed on Texas women during the time period looked at took place in Texas.
What does this study tell us about generally the effect of legal limits on abortion and laws and regulations that impose them?
Sure. Overall, again, they were able to look at Texas abortion data and looked at abortions that took place in Texas and looked at abortions that were performed on Texas women who went out of state. And they found, when you look at the total number, both in-state and out-of-state, I think when you look at the months of March, April, and May, numbers went down by about 8%. So there is a pretty good body of research showing that incremental pro-life laws do work, and the instance of abortion is sensitive to its legal status. That, again, there's a good body of research showing different kinds of pro-life laws work, whether it's parental involvement laws, whether it's limits on tax-free funding of abortion, whether it's informed consent law. And even we know for other countries, you know, when they put legal limits on abortion, when they protect unborn children, abortion numbers go down. So this adds to a nice body of research showing that, you know, regulating abortion, limiting it, protecting unborn children, that does have a real impact.
Dr. Michael New is visiting assistant professor of social research and political science at the Catholic University of America. He's associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute and columnist for National Review Online. You'll find links to his columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Dr. New, thank you very much for your time.
No, thanks for having me.
We'll be looking at the Epiphany hymn, The Only Son from Heaven, a remarkable hymn in several respects, dating back to the time of the Reformation and 16th century reformer Martin Luther's call for more hymns. Pastor Will Whedon will be our guest to study this Epiphany hymn next.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR21. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
For your next family vacation, consider Our Beach House, a charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
You shall not commit adultery. What does this mean? We should fear and love God so that we lead a chaste and decent life in what we say and do, and husband and wife love and honor each other. Thus, Martin Luther explains the sixth commandment, you shall not commit adultery. This month's issue of the Lutheran Witness takes up these topics and discusses homosexuality, transgenderism, and our own struggle to live a chaste and decent life. Pick up your copy today of the Lutheran Witness at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Do you know any military veterans in your church or community? Do you have a passion to support and reach them with the gospel of Jesus Christ? Then Operation Barnabas is for you. Called by Christ's love, Operation Barnabas engages, empowers, and equips LCMS faith communities to provide hope, healing, and support to military-connected persons living in their community. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces.